The question that we come to think about tonight is this one. Isn't there a conflict between science and Christianity? There seems to be today this, struggling for words this morning, I'm doing it again this evening, this idea that we've got to choose between science or Christianity. That you can't have both, and that's the presupposition behind a question like this. And in many schools and universities today, and it's great to see some of our young people here this evening, it is common to hear people saying that somehow or other science has disproved God, or at least has made God in some way irrelevant. And that's reinforced by people like Richard Dawkins in his book, The God Delusion, who has added to the popular notion that science in general, and evolutionary science in particular, have made a belief in God unnecessary and obsolete. In this book, The God Delusion, he argues that you cannot be an intelligent scientific thinker and still hold religious beliefs. So he's suggesting to us that you have to make that choice. And that's the presupposition behind the question that we're looking at tonight. In fact, he goes further than that. He wants his readers to believe that the more intelligent and the more rational and the more scientifically minded you are, the less you will be able to believe in God. And we live today in a world that which wants us to believe that Christianity and science are in direct conflict with each other, that we have to somehow or other as Christians make a choice. Are we going to go down the scientific route or are we going to follow our Christian faith? That the two in some way are incompatible. And I want to begin this evening by asking the question, where does that kind of thinking come from? Where does this so-called conflict arise from? That we're being asked the question as Christians today, what about this conflict? Now, at the risk of being a little oversimplistic this evening, and please forgive me if it comes across as being oversimplistic anyway, I need to give you a very brief history lesson. And you know, because I've stood here before and told you, history is not my strongest point. And I listened to Neil saying this morning that, what was it, 0.5% you got in your exam of history? Well, let's just have a very brief history lesson. Because it will help us to understand where this kind of question is coming from. Firstly, to a scientist by the name of Galileo, who lived in the 16th century. He was an astronomer and a mathematician and a physicist. And back in his day, there was a belief that the world was at the very center of the universe. The earth in which we live was at the center of the universe. And everything else rotated around the earth. That was the position that the church took in his day. And Galileo discovered through his scientific discoveries that that was not true. And I like this little cartoon because this showed you just how the church responded to Galileo. He was forced to publicly deny the discoveries that he had made. And he ended up spending the final 8 years of his life in prison. And of course we know as we look back in history now that Galileo was mostly right. And the church at that time was mostly wrong. So I want to take you back to that and just a snapshot in history and show you how this view began to appear throughout history. Secondly, if we fast forward a little bit to this person by the name of Charles Darwin, very familiar to us and more familiar to us. I heard just last week on the radio that next year is going to be the 150th anniversary of Charles Darwin's discoveries. There's a massive exhibition already taking place in London and we will hear a lot more about this scientist in the coming months. He entered the science versus God debate when he first proposed his theory of evolution by natural selection in 1859. Atheists at that time were delighted because for the first time it allowed them to explain the existence of the world without the influence of a creator. And so Darwin's theory of evolution simply served to widen this gap between science and Christianity. Although it's very interesting to note as we pass, that the most opposition that Darwin got from his theory at that time was not from Christians, but from scientists. But today, Darwin's ideas have become a kind of alternative religion for many people. So the debate continues, and the gap begins to widen. As you continue throughout history, you come to somebody by the name of Friedrich Nietzsche, who emerged around the same time as Darwin, and he coined the rather popular phrase, God is dead. He encouraged a whole new way of living that excluded religion and moral behavior. And for the very first time in history, science and philosophy were being brought together. Fast forward into our own generation and back to this man by the name of Richard Dawkins, who is no stranger to our television screens and our newspapers. He has set out deliberately to promote the view that science has essentially disproved the Christian faith, which has led many in our generation to a belief that science has disproved the miraculous. So, even a little snapshot in history will show you how that question has developed. How people are asking that question today, where that kind of thinking comes from, and where the gap between science and Christianity began, and how it's been pushed wider as the years have gone by. The question that we're looking at tonight presupposes that we have to make a choice between following Christ as Christians and to embrace the discoveries of the scientific world. I want to suggest three things tonight in answer to this question that you may find helpful if you're asked in the coming week. Firstly, I want to suggest to you tonight that science and Christianity are compatible. Nicky Gumbel, in his book called Searching Issues, makes some observations about the Christian faith that are worth noting. He argues that what many people fail to realize, that science as we know it today actually began within a Christian worldview. In other words, it was the Christian worldview that actually provided the right kind of environment for scientific investigations to take place. And there are a number of reasons for that. Firstly, because Christians believe in one God. And because of that belief in one God, it led scientists to expect there to be a uniformity in nature and a world and a universe that was capable of being studied. Secondly, because Christians believe in a creator God, scientists were led to expect a world that would be ordered and capable of being understood in the first place. And thirdly, because of the Christian belief in a transcendent God. By that we mean a God who is separate from nature, which means that nature was open to study and experimentation. And many, many thousands of scientific investigations and discoveries would be remembered today that came out of that particular worldview of thinking. Now, I don't want to bore you this evening by giving you loads of examples, but let me just give you a snapshot. Copernicus, he's a good-looking chap, isn't he? No photographs back in the 15th century. But somebody who held the office of canon in the Polish church laid the foundation for modern astronomy. He was the first scientist to suggest on mathematical grounds that the Earth travelled around the sun. Being born out of a Christian worldview. Galileo, we've already mentioned today, a little earlier, has laid the foundations for modern mechanics and experimental physics. And although persecuted by the church of his day, he continued to hold to his Christian faith. Sir Isaac Newton is perhaps one of the greatest scientists of all time, who actually regarded his theological books as more important than his scientific books. And you know some of the discoveries that are related to Sir Isaac Newton. And I could stand here tonight and give you example after example after example of pioneering scientists who throughout history saw no conflict between Christianity and science. And that even today, contrary to what people like Richard Dawkins would have us believe, there are thousands and thousands of scientists who profess a personal faith in God. Perhaps this quotation from the Reverend John Polkinghorne, who was himself a professor of mathematical physics, best summarizes this compatibility between science and religion. He says, "Men of religion can learn from science what the physical world is like. And men of science can receive from religion a deeper understanding of the world." So when you begin to take a closer look at this question this evening, I want to suggest to you that we consider firstly that there is a compatibility between science and Christianity that over the years has been pushed to the side can actually be brought back together. The second thing I want to suggest in answer to this question is that science and Christianity, when you begin to take a closer look, are complementary. Somebody has written, and I quite like this quotation, I apologize for the number of quotations which I will share with you this evening, but this person said, I couldn't find their name, "It is probably true that there are more disagreements and apparent contradictions within science itself than between science and the Christian faith." And I want to suggest to you tonight that there is a compatibility when you take a closer look at this question between science and the Christian faith. You see, Christianity and science are there to answer two very different kinds of questions. You could describe them as being two sides of the same coin. On one side of that coin, we have the how and the when questions of science. On the other side of that coin, we have the who and the why questions of the Christian faith. Even Stephen Hawking, who was arguably the most brilliant scientist of his generation, has admitted the following: that science may solve the problem of how the universe began, but it cannot answer the question, why does the universe bother to exist? And I want to suggest to you this evening that science and Christianity are like two sides of the same coin. If you want to know how something happens, science is a pretty good place to start. If you want to know why, then science is going to struggle. The Christian faith helps us to examine some of the big why questions of life, and science exists to answer the how and the when questions of life. Here's a rather humorous illustration that may help you and just keep us on track if you're beginning to nod a little bit. Imagine a young boy walking into the kitchen. He finds the kettle boiling on the stove. Wondering why it's boiling, he asks his dad, who just happens to be a scientist, for the purpose of our illustration. His dad replies, "Well, son, it's because the combustion of the gas transfers heat to the bottom of the kettle, which, being a good heat conductor, transfers the heat to the water. The molecules of the water become more and more agitated, they give off steam, and there is your boiling water." A little dissatisfied by his father's reply, the boy turned to his mother with the same question and said, "Mummy, why is the kettle boiling?" To which his mother replied, with the answer that he'd been looking for all along, "I'm boiling the kettle because I'm about to make a cup of coffee." Now, that just demonstrates very briefly just the different kinds of questions that are being answered by science and by Christianity. If our only explanation of life comes from science, we are not left with a great deal. If the answer of the explanation of life from science were to answer our origin, for example, then we end up concluding that our origin is just a matter of chance, that our lives become a little more than a collection of minerals and chemicals that are worth about 2 pence. And if we allow science to answer the question of our destiny, we will eventually discover that actually what happens is we rot and we become food for worms. If we are prepared to let science explain the purpose of life, then it will not amount to a great deal. Even Aldous Huxley, the author of Brave New World, who was an atheist and a scientist, was prepared to admit the limitations of science. He wrote these words: "Science has explained nothing. The more we know, the more fantastic the world becomes, and the profounder the surrounding darkness. The bout between science and God is called off due to the fact that the competitors were competing for different titles." So let's return to our question for a moment. Isn't there a conflict between science and Christianity? We've discovered, if you follow my thinking this evening, two important things about the relationship between science and the Christian faith. Firstly, that when you begin to take a closer look at this question, you'd find that there is a compatibility. That many of the world's inventions, as you go back through history, were actually born out of a Christian worldview that encouraged Christian scientists to examine the world in which they live. Secondly, we've discovered that science and Christianity in many ways are complementary, two sides of the same coin, asking different questions. Mix them up and you end up in real trouble. Go to one looking for the wrong set of questions and you will not get the right kind of answers. But there's a third thing I want to suggest to you this evening. I want to suggest to you that science points us, or at least has the potential to point us, towards the Christian faith, rather than actually pushing us away from it. The study of science will never be able to prove that God exists, but I do believe that it can point us in a particular direction, because as Christians, we believe that the natural world in which we live contains the evidence for a creator God. Some of the pictures that you've seen here already this evening, some of the songs that we've been singing, some of the words that we've been reading from the Bible suggest to us that the world in which we live contains sufficient evidence to point us in the direction of a creator God. And there are two main arguments that come from the scientific world that point us in that direction. Firstly, there's what has been described as the argument of first cause. In other words, why is there something rather than nothing? Towards the end of his life, Charles Darwin wrote some very interesting words. They're not very often quoted. He wrote of the impossibility of conceiving this immense and wonderful universe, including man, as a result of blind chance or necessity. In other words, he's saying, as he reached the end of his life, I cannot understand how this just happened. And he goes on to say, when thus reflecting, language is a little quaint, hopefully you get the gist of what he's saying. When thus reflecting, I feel compelled to look to a first cause, having an intelligent mind in some degree to that of a man, and I deserve to be called a theist. Very interesting quotation. A man who actually started out his life with very clear Christian convictions, and perhaps towards the end of his life reached the same kind of conclusions. Stephen Hawking, writing in our own day, says almost everyone now believes that the universe and time itself had a beginning at the Big Bang. In other words, there is the potential argument from within the scientific world that can point us towards the existence of a creator God. And science, rather than pushing us away from the Christian faith, can actually point us in the direction of the Christian faith. The second scientific argument that pushes us in that direction, I notice that you've already used this picture tonight, Sharon, is the evidence for design. That doesn't prove the existence of God, but it does point, and it is a powerful indicator. Stephen Hawking is prepared to admit that our world cannot just exist in the way that it does. I was reading a rather complex argument this afternoon, and I really couldn't make an awful lot of head nor tail because it was way beyond me. But this is the question which he asked. I think this is very interesting for somebody who's not a Christian. How was it, he says, that the initial density of the universe was chosen so carefully? Asking the question, how did it happen? And then I went on to read something really that is quite staggering. He said, if the density of the universe, which I don't have a clue what that means, but if the density of the universe, because something to do with weight and matter, was just a fraction different, then the universe at the point of creation would only have lasted for 10 years. So Hawking asks, he says, how is it that it just happened to be like this? You see, science has the potential to point us in the direction of a creator God. It doesn't prove that God exists, but it is a debate that exists within the scientific world that has the potential to point us towards the existence of a creator God. Albert Einstein, writing from a Jewish perspective, said, a legitimate conflict between science and religion cannot exist. Science without religion is lame, and religion without science is blind. I think that's a wonderful quotation. So how do we respond to this question that we're looking at tonight? Isn't there a conflict between Christianity and science? Maybe you choose to answer that question the way we've looked at it tonight, or maybe you choose to answer it in a very different way. But it is a question that people are asking. How would you answer it? Well, you might decide, as we've done tonight, to suggest, if you go back through history, that it was out of a Christian worldview that many of today's scientific discoveries came about. That people, because of their belief in God, began to examine the world in which they live and expected to find an ordered universe that they could examine. Or maybe you might point to the fact that there is a complementary existence between science and Christianity, like two sides of the same coin, asking different kinds of questions. Making sure that we don't go in the wrong direction to ask the wrong kind of questions and end up with the wrong kind of answers. Or maybe you might choose to suggest that if we look at certain aspects of science, that they can actually point us in the direction of the Christian faith. There are all kinds of ways we could have gone with a question like this tonight. But I am conscious, as we look at some of these questions on a Sunday night, and particularly this one, that there is an important question that we need to ask ourselves as Christians. How do you respond to the study of science as Christians? Sometimes in the past, Christians have been accused of just burying their head in the sand, of being so overly dogmatic and not engaging in any way at all. How do you respond as a Christian to the study of science? Well, firstly, I want to suggest to you, as I've done this evening already, that I don't believe we need to make this choice. I think this choice has come from history, as we've seen the way in which our modern thinking has developed and has pushed God out of the picture. I believe we need to recognize that science and Christianity belong together. I love this quotation from the physicist William Bragg. He says, religion and science are opposed, but only in the same sense as that which my thumb and my forefinger are opposed. And between the two, one can grasp anything. That for me really hits the nail on the head. Christianity and science belong together. Both subjects are equally open to examination and scrutiny. We are on the same side if we are in the pursuit of truth and discovering what is really true. Christian faith is based on truth. We have nothing to fear if the scientific world is genuinely trying to discover what is true. Both Christianity and science are seeking to understand the truth, and truth cannot conflict with itself. Secondly, I believe we need to respect the study of science. I suspect that the debate between science and Christianity sometimes has more to do with attitude than it does with evidence. Sometimes, if we're honest as Christians, we can become paranoid about being hit over the head with the latest scientific idea about the existence or the non-existence of God. As one idea seems to come again and again and again, or one new idea after another after another. And then on the other side of the fence, scientists are concerned about Christians and they become equally suspicious about anything that can't be analysed in a laboratory. We touched tonight very briefly on the question of evolution. It's a question that I want to come back to in the new year because it's a specific question that we need to spend more time looking at together. Tonight's question is a more general one. But I believe it helps us to stay on track, even when it comes to handling some of the bigger issues of evolution and our understanding about the opening chapters of Genesis or how you choose to translate those chapters. Science and Christianity belong together. They're like two sides of the same coin. Science is asking the how and the when questions. Christianity offers to answer some of the why and the who questions of life. Science is a gift from God. And our civilization owes a great deal to our scientists and to the study of science. And thirdly, we need to recognize tonight that science can only take us so far. I like Einstein's quotation. He says, science without religion is blind. In other words, there's something missing. Science can only take us so far. And I believe that one of the reasons that so many people struggle to accept the Christian faith and the belief that God has intervened in the natural order of our world is because we cannot accept things which don't seem logical to our minds. Things which appear as supernatural, we say they cannot happen because logically they cannot happen. So we struggle to try and come to terms with anything that is beyond our rational mind to understand. In a few weeks' time, as Christians, we will celebrate the virgin birth and the incarnation of Jesus as God stepped into our world, as God stepped into the world which he has created. When it gets to Easter, as Christians, we celebrate the bodily resurrection of Jesus from the dead. When you get to the New Testament, it recounts numerous miracles that Jesus performed throughout his life. Miracles are hard to believe, and in a sense, so they should be. But as we begin to conclude this evening, I want to take you to one scene in the Bible which just helps for me to bring some of this together. It comes at the end of Matthew 28. You don't need to look at it. Where the risen Jesus stands in front of his followers, and their response to the miraculous is both exciting and encouraging. Matthew says this to us, when they saw the risen Jesus, when they saw that Jesus had risen from the dead, when they saw him, they worshipped him. But some doubted. And that's a remarkable admission. Because here is the author of an early Christian document telling us that some of the founders of the Christian faith couldn't believe the miracle of the resurrection, even when they were looking straight at Jesus, able to touch him with their hands and able to physically see him standing in front of them. That snapshot, for me, is a reminder that we are not the only people to struggle with the miraculous. The apostles-to-be responded like any group of modern people today. Some believed with their eyes, and some didn't. Some had a lot of trouble believing, and some believed more easily than others. But perhaps the most instructive thing about their reaction is what it says to us about the purpose of the miraculous of the Christian faith. Because here, clearly, the miraculous is designed to lead us to the worship of God. That was always the purpose behind the miracles of Jesus. He used them to heal the sick, and he used them to feed the hungry, and he used them to raise the dead. I love the way Tim Keller describes our response to the miraculous in his book, The Reason for God. He says, as modern rational people, we tend to think of the miracles or the miraculous, the miracles of Jesus, as times when Jesus suspended the natural order. But Jesus meant them to be the restoration of the natural order. Jesus was beginning to put things back in the way that they were intended to be. We've seen very briefly tonight in the time that we have that Christianity and the study of science belong together. Science is a gift to us from God. They can be compatible, they can be complementary, but science can only take us so far. We need an understanding and an experience of the miraculous in order to take us further. The Christian faith makes it very clear that we live in a world that is not as God intended it to be. It shows us that God has stepped into the world which he himself has created. That Jesus came to redeem a world that is wrong and to heal it where it is broken. And his miracles are not just proof of his power, but are in fact a wonderful foretaste of what he is going to do with that power. The miracles of Jesus and the miraculous nature of the Christian faith are not just to be a challenge to our minds, but they are also to be a promise to our hearts that the world that you and I most long for is coming. And that is something which science will never be able to deliver.